Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by a sales trainer who specializes in helping startups build sales teams that match the culture of the entire organization. Catherine Brinkman, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Colin. Appreciate it.
Happy to have you. Really excited for this one. I was really intrigued by your background initially. We met through LinkedIn. I was kind of digging and I thought, oh, I've read that book. And then I had the thought, I was like, I wonder if she's had the same thought when she saw my LinkedIn profile. So tell me a little bit about, before we jump into the topic today, which is using the phone to penetrate your target account list, let's talk a little bit about how you got here and your background, because I think that's super relevant to today.
Sure. I mean, I literally joke, I started in first grade. From fundraising, and there was a sister school in Ethiopia. We were supposed to sell gift wrapping paper. I asked my parents, is it okay if I call people in your little phone book back in the day? They said, no problem. So I literally started calling, and it turns out that a first grader ended up being one of the top producers in her K-8. And it just went from there. It literally just went from there. I sold ad space in high school. I did not understand what that meant to be the quote unquote business manager. I was told later that it's $500 a production of to produce the newspaper. And I was like, what do you mean? So I literally had the phone book back in the day. I did that at UCLA as well. And then I just went on into politics and was a fundraiser for some politicians out in California. Went into Dale Carnegie. They were fortunate enough to see something that I didn't see when they made me a sales trainer, but I was also a top producer for them in Silicon Valley for a number of years. And it's really just about getting your name out there, getting the company message out there, and not being afraid to pick up the phone, pick up your computer and email. And even nowadays, text or message on LinkedIn, how I met you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love the... I've been trying to work a good like pun on like winning friends and influencing people, but I didn't succeed in the intro. So I thought I'd just call it out and be like, it's a great book. If you haven't read it, definitely check it out. And you sold training there for quite a while.
Yes. Yes. For over a decade. It is a fantastic book, super quick read, highly recommend it. A lot of times I'll just overcome that objection early on. People are like, oh, it's old and outdated. It's really not. I mean, Carnegie took the moment and made a list of people that he found successful in the early 20s and 30s, and he interviewed them. And that's what the book is about. And he created those awesome 30 principles that really talk about don't criticize, condemn, or complain, mm-hmm. which is always the hardest, in my opinion, to do. You may have those 30 human relations principles that take salespeople from being people that see dollar signs and you're trying to close something, really genuinely trying to solve problems. Conversely, if you're someone that's really afraid of deathly public speaking, you don't like it, you don't want to talk to people, or you think maybe your product is like, the book will give you the confidence to hit one chord with someone and really understand what is their need, how can you help them, what do you like about them? That helps you sell. Selling is all about finding people that you along with and are on the same page with.
So I'm a huge fan of How to Win Friends and Influence People, as evidenced by my trying to make a bad pun earlier and not succeeding. I think it's one of those books. It's a sales book. It's not a sales book, but it is a great sales book that almost every person in sales would benefit from reading. For myself, it's on my, read every 3 years, 2 to 3 years list. And I think I got another year left on that before I've got to reread it again. But every time I read it, I get more and more value out of it. And I think I buy it almost every time because I've got two on my shelf and an audiobook and a Kindle. And I'm sure I have a digital copy, some PDF I bought, a long time ago before Kindle was a thing.
Perfect. Well, Carnegie thanks you for the royalties.
You're very welcome. So jumping into, you know, what we promised to talk about, why don't we start? I know we're going to start with warm intros, and then we're going to jump into sort of cold introduction, or like when you're going in cold. But why don't we start with warm? And so can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, some of the best ways to develop warm introductions?
The best way to really develop those warm introductions on your account list is from using the information you already have within your CRM. So determining and going back in those records to see who was receptive to the previous person's information, their emails, but also if it's someone that you've developed in an account, just making sure that they know who you are. Don't just call them to call them and sell them something. Call them to see how the product's working. Call them to see how their day is going. If you see something in the news that's regarding the company, call. I know WeWork has obviously been in the news quite a lot here. And I work out of a WeWork. So talking to them and hearing what they have to say, I've made some friends within that company, and now we're talking about perhaps doing something together. So it's things like that, just talking to people and getting to know those that are favorable to your company goes a very long way.
Gotcha. And so what are some other ways that you can work to sort of develop and grow that like warm referral network?
I mean, really, it's people jump ship a lot anymore. No one, for the most part, is at a company for 30, 40 years. So keeping those contacts, regardless of the company, regardless of the position, I learned early on that you may be speaking with someone that could be an admin, but in 10 years, maybe they went to a startup and they're now like the head of HR or their CFO or CEO even. So keeping those relationships, quick text messages, quick emails, just, hey, how are you? What's up? It's not anything to do with sales. It's about building that relationship and really understanding where are they at in their career. If there's anything you can do to help. And that doesn't mean help by sell them something. That means like, hey, do you want to go to a baseball game? Or is there someone else I know in jewelry that is doing a promo? Do we need help with that? So it's really understanding about this is a long-term relationship regardless of their company goes a long way with nurturing those warm leads. Because when that person leaves and they go to a new company, all of a sudden that company is a lead, right? You have a warm person there now that knows you.
Totally. And that's super helpful. And so we don't always have the luxury of an existing customer list that we can really work off of.
No.
And so what happens when we got to go in cold?
I mean, you have to just be tenacious and expect to get no response and don't be afraid to have fun with it and make it a game. And what I mean by that is count every no, getting you closer to a yes. If they don't respond to you for 2 months, make that a joke that, hey, that Q2, they didn't talk to me. But really is determining, okay, do I leave voicemails? I'm emailing. I'm going on LinkedIn. I don't like to message on Facebook when it has to do with business until they come to me. Mm-hmm. But LinkedIn, text messaging, if I know they're the actual decision maker, text messaging is totally on the table. I don't veer away from that. And it's just even leaving an email, leaving a voicemail saying, I'm going to continue to reach out to you. I need to speak with you, or typing, I'll be back. You can have fun with it.
Awesome. And so I'd love to zoom in. Let's double click on the phone for a second.
Sure.
So when you're going in cold on the phone,
yep.
Where does it start? Like, is it for you? Is it like, there's so much of that mindset, and you strike me as somebody who's spent a bunch of time on the phone. So talk to me about your sort of mindset going into these calls.
I like to block the fact that I'm going to make 200 dials. I don't think about the 40 minutes or the hour. I go by dials. It just depends on if you're going to be leaving voicemails. Then I know my dial count's going to be down because I'm spending that 45 second to 1 minute leaving that voicemail. Mm-hmm. And it really is a numbers game. It's kind of like I grew up as a swimmer my first few years of high school and was horrible. And my dad said, don't compete against anybody else but yourself, and just shave seconds off. So with cold calling, you're setting that block of those 200 dials. So it's how fast can you get through them? gets me through. It's a very big volume game when you're doing straight cold calling and straight business development.
For sure. Are you thinking about the, like, this is number one of 200, or are you just trying to focus on, this is just a call?
This is just a call. It's a game. It literally is a game. I don't know who's going to pick up. And I have gotten business by making one dial that happened to be one huge account. And I happened to get through to the right person. And it's just having that, you don't know what's going to happen. The worst case scenario, if you really hate cold calling, the worst case scenario is they're going to hang up on you. Okay, whatever. Maybe you forget what you're supposed to say and you hang up. That's happened to me. Okay, whatever. No one's dying in these situations, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you're cold calling. They don't know who you are. So it's not like you're losing a huge deal that's already in stage four where it's past prospecting. You're proposing and you're trying to go in for the close. This is, they don't know you. So you can call back in a week and they'll have no idea and they will not remember.
Beautiful. And that's sort of the beauty of the anonymity of the phone, or at least, you know, as long as depending on where you're calling from and if you're using a local dial or your actual number, et cetera.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that you can star 67, you can block your number. There's different ways to go around it. We're touching on this, so I'll go into it. But if you get a gatekeeper and that decision maker is in the office and the gatekeeper says, you know, do you want us to hold? Do you want to hold? Yes. I've been notorious. It happened last week where I will be on hold and I will be on my cell phone calling from another number while on hold for that decision maker. Or I will just put them on speaker and mute it and go about sending emails to people while I'm waiting for them to pick up. I'm pretty relentless when it comes to that. Like, you have to multitask and don't be afraid to hold for someone because they're not expecting that. They think you're going to hang up.
Yeah. What's your strategy there? When you call in and you're on hold and then you call again,
yep.
Like, do they think, like, does that get you through?
It does. Like, they don't expect it. They don't have any idea what to do with that. When you're on hold on line one and their switchboard and it lights up line five and it's still Catherine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, I'm nice about it. I'm like, hey, you know, I know you said you were going to put me through. I'm still holding. Do we need to leave a voicemail? And I say, what do we need to do here? Because it's at this point, I need them to engage and help me out.
Totally.
And then they usually feel bad for me or they're embarrassed and they'll put me through.
So okay. So this is like if you think they're just sticking you on hold just to sit there and rot kind of strategy, then you can call and get them back on the line. That's a relentless pro move right there, Catherine. I love it.
You have to be relentless. You use the term relentless. You just have to just not take it personal. And your job is you're trying to do these 200 dials. That's your goal. It's not hitting an hour. It's hitting those 200 dials.
Gotcha. Out of curiosity, you keep coming back to 200 dials. So is that your goal when you sit down for a day of cold calling?
It really does depend. It depends on what your pipeline's at.
Yeah.
If you're brand new and you're developing and going from scratch, I 100% say 200 dials. And the reason I say that is everyone, I think rule of thumb is kind of like do 100 dials, 100 dials. Well, people aren't successful on 100 or everyone would be doing this. It's about going above and beyond. So when I started my business with Dale Carnegie, I shouldn't say my business, but you know, when I started with Carnegie and was given my territory, that's your book of business, right? And there really wasn't a whole lot there. So I would sit and I came to the 200 dials because I would sit from 9 a.m. until 5, take a lunch, but I would dial continuously. And if you really are dialing for dollars a full day, you're hitting 200 dials. You're not hitting 100. And that's with meaningful conversation.
Yeah. And I'm assuming phone only, you're hitting that 200 number.
Yep.
Like you phone only, you're not leaving voicemails. You are leaving voicemails if you're shooting for 200.
It will depend. If it is a C-suite that is a decision maker that I get through to their voicemail, I will leave a voicemail and I'll leave a compelling reason as to what my voicemail reasoning is. If it is just mid-level, no, I'm not going to leave a voicemail.
So talk to me about that compelling reason. Because if you're crushing 200 dials a day, how much research are you putting in ahead of time because like you got to hit a number. You can't spend 10 minutes doing perfect research on every dial. So
No.
What's that compelling reason? And then part two, what sort of research are you doing pre-call?
Sure. So at Carnegie, I have the luxury of picking what industries I wanted to go after, which is a lot easier. If you don't have that luxury and you have an account list, you should segment your account list by industry and what they do, so you can kind of note those trends. So when you've noted the trends, that makes those calls easier to make. And I just segment, what is their dominant buying motive? What could their pain point be? What have I seen in the news? And how does that transfer into these other accounts? And how can I bundle them so there's a common thread? And that's how I create that compelling statement, return on investment, sort of credibility, voicemail that then gets a return phone call or gets me through. They don't hang up on me when I call back again.
I love it. So let's break that down here and just help me. I wasn't fast enough on my keyboard. So what are the core components here? So you break it down by industry.
I break it down by industry.
Yeah.
I go and I look at what are the trends in the news. I am in sales for a reason. I enjoy money, as most people in sales do. So I will go look at those higher revenue companies and see what is in their investment portfolio and within their PR department what's trending. And that will be my lead in. And then go ahead.
Yeah. So you're looking at say we're researching company A, you're going in and looking at a bigger company, or are you saying that company A is a bigger company? And so you're looking at their PR department.
I'm going to say that I'm looking at revenue generated. I don't care about how the employee count. I care about the revenue that they've generated.
Okay. And then you're looking at what their internal PR team is producing and investing in.
Yes.
Okay.
Earnings calls, huge for tech. If you're a SaaS software, Cisco's very transparent. They tell you exactly per quarter, even now, where they're spending their dollars, what they're doing. Google's very similar. So be on those earnings calls and just take really good notes when you do get a hold of someone, and don't shy away from asking, what is something, here's what I've heard. What are you hearing? What is your pain point? And then tweaking your message to go with whatever you hear most common from those people you speak to. It's also a listening game.
Gotcha. And so like, let's say we're going after a set of accounts in software.
Sure.
So we're going after the software industry. You're going to do some research on the industry. So what you're hearing in that, what you're seeing in the news. And then if we're going into a big company like Cisco, you're going to also look at their PR department and then try and connect the dots between here's what we see happening. Here's the trend in the news. Here's what we see your company kind of talking about. And if they're not public, if you're not on their earnings calls, then, you can look at their social media, or you can look at, maybe their founders on a podcast or something like that.
Yep.
Which I hear is common. And then you're using that in your voicemail message to create a compelling reason why they should call you back or at least pay attention to your email.
Yes.
Perfect. And so that's the voicemail. And so, perfect. So can you give me, can you think of an example off the top of your head of time that you've done this in the past or done this recently, or do you want to, can we work on one together?
Sure.
I'm curious to see it live in action.
Sure. What's my company? Who am I calling?
Let's say Cisco.
Okay.
So calling in. Yeah.
You got it. I mean, the way that it would work is I would say their name. I'm very quick to leave my phone number in the beginning of the message. And the reason I do that is because we don't all have iPhones or smartphones where you can scan back and forth. Sometimes we still have those analog and you have to hit repeat, which is annoying. So I leave my voicemail right up front. I leave only my first name because I have a long first and last and they don't care about my last name. So yeah. I'll leave just my first name. I'll leave that compelling message and then I will follow it up with my phone number again, the company I'm with, and then also that first and last name. That way, so it's a little bit more formal.
Gotcha. And so, and that compelling message is something along the lines of, you know, I saw this trend in the industry, and then I also mentioned, and I noticed that, you know, your PR department had done this. So I just wanted to get your take. Is that?
Yes. I mean, it would go something like, hi, Jim, this is Catherine. I'm calling from BHY Consulting. My phone number is 650-346-9111. I'm calling because I was on your earnings call earlier this week, and I noticed that one of the things you're working on is developing a new IT team that focuses on XYZ. Mm-hmm. Wanted to talk to you more about that, understand what the needs are. So when you have an opportunity, please give me a call back. It's Catherine at BHY Consulting, Catherine Brinkman, 650-346-9111. I'm going to pause there for a second. I will say that the phone number is probably the most important. Totally put me on the spot. So usually what happens is I've done my pre-work myself and actually created something and understood within Cisco, what is it that they're working on exactly and how have I helped someone else? So let's break it down a little bit more on that, you know, what's the ROI, what's the hook to get them to call back? Mm-hmm. Let's say Cisco is hiring a development team of engineers that are going to focus on AI. And AI is pretty broad, right? So Cisco may be saying AI, but I've worked with, let's say, Pegasus Systems on their AI, which is very strategic, into robotic process automation. AI becomes all of a sudden robotic process automation, which is a whole subset different to Cisco. So that's going to get their attention, the fact that I knew the difference between AI and RPA. And then within Pegasus, it could also be something that I coach their sales team on focusing just on construction. I'm not saying Cisco's doing construction because that's not likely. But if Cisco had an AI phone system that they were developing specifically for construction that had the construction compliance, which is a whole separate segment that mm-hmm. Cisco does have, then I could build on the fact that I worked on a deeper piece of AI with Pegasus, who everyone should know is RPA driven, and Pegasus's project was focused on construction.
Okay, so there's that hook.
It's how you link it together, which is very, you kind of need a whiteboard to diagram it, which you can do. I've been noted to do that when it gets convoluted. So the big picture is the fact that it's going to be AI. The small picture is that it's a construction company that's RPA driven. And I work with Pegasus. Now I'm calling Cisco to explain why I'm calling and what I've done with Pegasus. So to back up, and maybe we want to edit, I'm not sure.
No, this is great. I love seeing the logic and how you stitch it together. A verbal whiteboard. Very awesome.
So streamlining it even better, it really would go something like, and hopefully it's under 45 seconds, but it would be, hey, Jim, it's Catherine. I'm calling from BHY at 650-346-9111. I'm calling because I noticed that you're going to be doing some AI with some construction companies, and I recently worked with Pegasus on their APA, on their RPA sales team to get them engaged more with construction companies in Silicon Valley. Not sure if this is something that you're working with the sales team or if this is more just development, but wanted to reach out and let you know. Congratulations. That's really cool. Again, it's Catherine Brinkman with BHY Consulting at 650-346-9111. It would go something like that.
That's awesome. I feel like we should all applaud, even if she can't hear you. Tiny golf claps for Catherine. That's
awesome. Thank you.
Stitching so really together.
It's being able to stitch it together that quickly. And then because you have that industry, okay, so I have a construction, somebody focused on construction, mm-hmm. or I have someone interested in AI, or I can drill down on that AI piece and go with the robotic process automation and drill even deeper. So it's just finding those little things through. If you're brand new to sales, pick an industry. When I first started with Carnegie, I'm originally from Northern California. I like wine. One of the industries I targeted was Napa Sonoma wineries. And I focused on the communications between the wine growers and forecasting and the actual salespeople. And I very quickly found out that a lot of wineries in Northern California are allocation only. So they do not have a budget or a need for something like training. So I dropped them. in the same time when I did this, what I did find out is that there is a lot of equipment that gets rented out in Napa, Sonoma, that yeah. also gets rented throughout the country from not a lot of companies. Those companies that have that winemaking or that beer making, the hops, brewery equipment, mm-hmm. they became an industry.
Ah, there you go.
So it's just that flexibility of seeing, okay, this isn't working, but I noticed that, and that is around everywhere, and I can call. I'm going to flip to this right now.
I love it. And so I love how you kind of start with, even though you didn't mention it, you started with that case study, with that customer story that you already have in your pocket.
Yes.
That's really that's the hook.
Right? Right.
And then basically this is all just wrapper for how do I connect that hook to what's relevant to them.
So exactly.
Case study, relevant hook.
Yep.
Look for either trends in the industry or trends of like what the company is working on. So you can connect it to either of those two. So say they weren't working on a construction or a phone system. You could probably say, okay, I know they're in the phone game. They're probably working on some AI. So I can just go with a generic sort of framing up of like, hey, I know you're in, you know, I know you're in the phone business. I imagine you've got a team working on AI, or I notice you've recently hired a bunch of, you know, AI researchers, et cetera. And then here's that hook, right? Yep. So it's kind of a clumsy, like step four, sort of a couple
of steps. It's very clumsy.
Yeah. Well, mine was, yours was much better.
Well, but don't be afraid to have it be clumsy. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Because the more you do it, the more it becomes rote. And I think that's where people, I will say this, I delete a lot of voicemails, but if I hear a salesperson that has a clumsy statement, I know they're just starting out, and more times than not, I'll call them and say, hey, you know, I got your message, and explain why I'm not interested. Don't be afraid to be clumsy. That's part of this. It's cold calling. Again, what's the worst that's going to happen? They're not going to respond to your voicemail, so you call back in 2 weeks, and by that point you've made a lot of dials and your message is much more honed.
100%. And like I'll double click on that one. I don't answer my phone a ton. I get hit with a ton of calls that believe I'm either under arrest, or I need health insurance, or I speak Mandarin or Cantonese. I'm not sure which.
Okay.
I get a ton of those, and that's probably like 90% of the phone calls I get. There are a few in there that are like actual sales development reps that are trying to reach me, and I never answer my phone, but I can, like, I get the voice to text piece. And uh-huh. If I do see that there's something interesting there, I'm going to give that a listen. Even if it's not particularly relevant to me, even I don't know who it is, it stands out amongst all of the garbage voicemails I get. It's this little,
right.
You get a little dopamine hit from like, oh, let's discover something new. So even if people aren't returning your calls, they certainly are listening to that voicemail. And what we're trying to achieve here is an impression, right?
Yes, exactly.
If you can get enough impressions, now you're somebody they know about, even if you are that annoying rep that just keeps, or maybe not annoying, but relentless rep that just keeps calling.
I've used the term annoying, and I have actually ended up closing deals, and I've said that, and they're like, no, you weren't annoying. We actually needed you. We just didn't know how to pay for you yet.
Mm.
Or I've also said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm so persistent. And they're like, no, that's what got you this meeting. Like, don't change that. So I think you mentioned something, the annoying word, where salespeople kind of hesitate to cold call because they think they're going to be annoying. And that isn't the case. We have, as salespeople, we're not just calling a blind list. We have a list. We have a reason behind why we're calling. And that takes the annoying out of it. And I think we need to be more cognizant of that as salespeople. And that helps us get the job done. And we'll build our self-confidence so we're not as leery about, do they really need us? Yeah, they do. They're on our list for a reason. Mm-hmm. And if we figure out in our research that they're not a match, take them off. If they don't hit that headcount, if they don't hit that revenue, if maybe they're pivoting within what they do as an industry company, take them off. There's somebody else that will replace them.
Totally. And you're totally right. It's that internal, it's the language. It's not necessarily the language you use externally. It's the language you use internally that's almost more impactful on yes. your mindset going into these. If you're thinking, oh, I'm being annoying, well, then you're going to spend your whole time grimacing because right. this is 200 opportunities to annoy somebody. But if you, one of the mental sort of reframing tricks I used to use on myself is I would look at, you know, I'd say, okay, well, these people are on this list for a reason. And they're on the list for a reason because they're good potential targets for me to call. Okay. Yep. And then I look at our case studies, right? And you see the smiling faces and you see the ROI and you see the happy customers and you think, okay, before they were a happy customer, what was it they were struggling with?
Exactly.
And then I think about that struggle and then I think, okay, everybody on this list is potentially struggling in that way. I'm just calling to see if there's a struggle there and if they care enough about that struggle to do anything about it.
And here's the hook for everyone else is we do have those customers that have bought from us and are happy. So if you are cold calling and you have a really bad day and people are hanging up on you or you're just not even getting a meeting and you hit your 200 dials, call one of those customers that you like and say, hey, what's up? Do that check-in where you're not selling anything and you're going to hear the smile on their face. And that's what this is all about. This is about solving problems. It's not about selling a widget or a software set. It's not that. It's about how are we making people's lives easier? We just happen to be the messenger of what that item is.
100%. It's sales that underpins the entire economy. So,
yep.
You know, you can be a part of it or you cannot be a part of it, but it's going to happen one way or the other.
Right.
Perfect. So on the phone, we've talked about sort of the volume. We've talked about the pre-plan, a bit on the mindset, and then we jumped into voicemail strategy. Have we exhausted it or is there anything we missed on the phone?
I'm going to say don't give up after 5 or 6 dials. Continue to call 7 or 8. If you have left a voicemail with those people before and they've called back from the voicemail, continue in the future to always leave them a voicemail. Mm-hmm. They respond to it. So it's kind of like putting the puzzle together per case by case. If they respond to text, if they respond to email, if they respond to voicemail, whatever that is, make a note in your CRM. So next go around, you can quickly hit them and get a response. But other than that, I mean, just keep up those dials and until you get that, we all know that guttural stop calling no, until you get that, keep calling.
And then when you do get that no, you're like, I'll give you a call in 3 months.
Pretty much, yeah.
Until I find out that your company is a terrible fit.
Or if your company is out of business, then we're good.
I imagine you're probably, you know, if you've called from a book, did you ever get the like, oh no, so-and-so just passed away like 10 years ago?
As I scratch my head, yes. Yes. I have had this newest company I'm working with. Their list is very, very old and I got someone yesterday. So this was going in to just re-engage the account. It had been dormant and they made a comment that so-and-so hadn't worked there for 7 years. And I just kind of shuddered. The other thing that I hear salespeople say is, you know, how are you today? And I was told long time ago, you know, don't say that, you know, what if something comes back? And I'm like, whatever, nothing's going to happen. That's ridiculous. It happened 2 times where one lady was newly divorced. And luckily I have a sense of humor. And I said, well, I don't know if I should congratulate you or say, I'll call you back. And it worked out and I actually closed her. And another person just had their dog die. I just was like, I'm so sorry. And then I didn't call him back because what are you supposed to, like, I didn't know what to do on that note. I think I called him back like 6 months later, but everyone else was on a pretty quick sales cycle at that point. When I was at this was a Carnegie situation. And after the woman said my dog died, I was like, oh, I'm never saying, how are you? Until they ask me how I am. Mm. If you ask me first, then I'll ask you.
Then it's
fine. But I don't answer. I don't ask that question anymore.
Yeah. That's totally fair.
So yeah. And it happened. I will say this, Colin, it happened early in my career. I will say, if you think of dials, it happened within my first 2 years at Carnegie, and that's when I really had heavy call volume. So, I mean, it happened early when someone said, oh, my dog died, after me saying that. So
yeah, I think my incident where like the husband had died and I would get a couple.
Yeah.
This is about 7 years ago is when I first started, was starting this company. And I was cold calling for an investment banker advisor that it was like a family friend. He's like, mm-hmm. $1,000 a month if you cold call for me and like try and book, you know, X number of meetings. And he literally handed me like the business phone book and was like, okay, the last guy finished here, you start here. And it was a phone book. It was like inches thick, like 6 inches thick. And so I think I started in like M's and just like kept working my way through.
Yeah.
And then I would text my wife like pictures of like funny names as how I like kept myself going. But I do remember a couple times where it was like, oh yeah, so-and-so died like 5 years ago. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I've got no way of handling that objection. It's like, I guess I'm just going to back away now. Cause I think there's no need to,
no.
I was like, I'm just going to, okay, that's the cold call. That's my energy gone.
Yep.
Take a pass on this one and I'm going to move to the next number.
Yep. And I mean, you know, we're salespeople and we have quotas and we have numbers and everyone's like, go, 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 go. It doesn't matter. But once in a while, you're going to get those people. I remember early on, it was the first recession. So not the first, but it was in 2008 where someone was like, I really can't afford a class at Dale Carnegie. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they said they were afraid of getting laid off. Mm. And I just thought, oh, okay. And then I was like, whatever, that's just a put off objection. And then next thing I know, next week, he wasn't laid off, but someone else at the same company in a different team was laid off. And that's when I called him and was like, okay, I got you. I'm going to leave it alone. We'll revisit this when things settle down. I understand.
Otherwise, you're getting into some real boiler room tactics. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which is a great movie, but not,
it's a good
sales,
movie.
Not yeah. sales tactics I would recommend.
No. Not if you're in it for the long game.
Yeah, that's fair. So moving on to email, when it starts with email, like when you think about sort of your email game, where does that start for you?
So basically think of it this way is I, write out a voicemail and I will write these out. I write out a second voicemail that then becomes that email. So it's very, very boilerplate and similar. It's just that credibility statement, that reason as to why I'm calling has changed a little bit and is a little bit more ROI driven. I just find that people are going to look at the numbers faster in an email and that may spark their interest more.
Yep.
So I also focus on the subjects of the email. And people laugh at me, but I literally say, hi, from XYZ company. So when I was at Nice Systems, it was hi from Nice. Right now I'm consulting with Infinitime. It is hi from Infinitime. And that gets them to open it. It's not a hard sell. It's just friendly. They're kind of like, oh, I don't see that a lot.
Huh. Interesting. So no, like hi from Catherine. It's hi from
the company.
Interesting. Okay.
So who am I? You know, right?
Okay. And so what does that rewritten voicemail look like? Cause that's really interesting because you're basically, you write this initial like core message and then you've got a couple different variations, you repackage it.
Sure. Sure.
Very environmentally friendly of you.
Thank you. So it really will be like their name, you know, hi, I'm Catherine. If I'm new to the company, I'll say that I'm new in the email and that kind of gets you a little bit of slack because they think, oh, okay, I'll be nice to them. I don't know them. They don't know me. That'll get you in the door a little bit. But I really just say that hi, this is Catherine. I'm with Infinitime. I'm trying to get a hold of you for XYZ reason. And I'll just lay it out. I've even been notorious and typed out, this is a cold email. I just want to go to lunch. And that's it.
This is a cold email. Let's get lunch.
Yep.
How's that working?
It's worked. It has worked.
Worked once in a million.
Let me put it this way. Those are very senior level individuals that are kind of like, they think it's funny. And they're like, oh, who's trying to sell me now? So that would be, and when I say senior, I mean, these are like Fortune 500 companies that will respond to something like that. It's not going to be your mid-level. And you have to be able to walk the talk if you get that meeting. I know I had one meeting with Chris McCann from 1-800-Flowers, and I used something similar to that. And I was so excited. And people were like, what is your deal? And I'm like, it's Chris McCann. He was an undercover boss. He's 1-800-Flowers. Like, how could you not be stoked? So it's really being able to have that ROI discussion, understanding what's in it for him and what am I going to talk to him about, laying it out, making sure that when I had my sales engineers with me, they knew what they were going to say. Mm-hmm. But it was getting that, I guess that's the thing. You can't bluff in this cold calling game. When you get someone on the phone, you got to be ready to go. When someone responds to your email to that funny, haha, let's get lunch, and they say yes, you need to have your facts ready to go. And that's where you spend the research time. That's when you go and spend that hour, hour and a half, and really dig deep as to what do they need? How can we solve it? And I can't reiterate, I know a lot of people that are in sales, they just sell on price. Don't sell on price. What's the ROI to them? Figure out what's their hourly wage, the department you're working in, what's the hourly wage and how are you going to save them money, and literally translate that. That's what sells. You're solving that person's problem. You're saving them money somehow.
And I love the, and I think it's partially because you've generated this meeting yourself. That you're putting so much time and investment
totally.
Into it, right? Like I think it's one of the things that I see salespeople struggle with a little bit, and maybe they don't realize they're struggling with it, in that you're getting these meetings magically show up on your calendar that somebody else booked for you. They're not doing that hour and a half of research and trying to figure out what is this why, and then connecting it through the call. You'll show up on a meeting and just jump to a demo. Hey, let me show you what I got.
Exactly.
I'm not going to call them out, but I had a scenario that happened to me last week, and it was a product that I was stoked to buy. It was a strong referral. Somebody said, hey, this tool is really good. I really like it. And I jumped on, and the guy's like, hey, how's it going? And then just like, he's like, I'm going to screen share for a bit. And then pulled up a slideshare and then clicked through a slideshare. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Anyway, so like if you're going to, you know, somebody's going to go through the trouble, you know, respect that they put a lot of time and effort into that meeting, and then to, you know, do the same and put the, you know, find those pieces and make those investments in figuring out, okay, this is that company. Here's what they're up to. Here's how this connects. Here's the pieces of our product that are going to be super relevant to them.
And when you're targeting industries, it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of time because you've already have a big baseline of what they're going after. You just have to individualize it and really understand, okay, what is their unit cost? What does their employee life look like? Mm-hmm. What is it that you're bringing to the table? And I think people, that's a lost art. And it is. I mean, anymore now, it's like, okay, hey, you're based on your demos booked. It's not, you know, people are literally, that's your quota, is how many demos have you booked? Well, guess what? If that's my quota, I don't care. I just want to get people on the phone. Doesn't matter who they are. I just want you to be on the phone and on the computer watching.
Yeah.
And that's how I make my money. That's not selling. That's order taking. I know I work with someone else that isn't, again, very software focused. Sunsetting means you're sunsetting a product. You are not going to support it after XYZ date. It is done. You're not, that's it. And so when I work with some customers that I have, some clients that talk about sunsetting as in, oh, well, we're still going to support it. No, you're not doing anybody a service. You're not. What are you doing? Like, explain what the latest version has, how it's going to help your current client base, what it's going to do for their employees, what it's going to do for you, and how do you justify that expense? Mm-hmm. That's selling. Order taking is okay, you don't want it. Okay, we're just going to take your maintenance and we'll move on. Mm.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't want this to come off as like, oh, to people that are experienced and just like crapping on the younger generation. I think there's a ton of great SDRs out there that definitely
there are.
Like, you know, that are earning the meetings and they're passing them to AEs who are appreciative and sort of respectful of people's time.
And that's right. And I'll say this for those of people that are watching and listening that have AEs, don't be mean.
Go ahead.
Don't shit on the demos you do get, because it's your responsibility as an AE to go to them and say, hey, what do I need to know about this customer? Coach them. You're only going to generate as much revenue to as good as they are. You're an AE for a reason, so don't hesitate to coach them on where you learned and what you've done. And I know when I've had an SDR, I literally gave a script and said, here's what I need to know.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no one's done this. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? No one's given you this like template. And it made the world of difference. It was super easy for him to follow. It gave me a ton of information, and it made him who got graded on his demo numbers, it made it a lot easier for me to close because I knew what I was getting handed. I wasn't just getting handed a demo, but it took me to have that initiative as an AE to go to him and be like, hey, I know this is how most people do it. I'm not like that. That's not your job. Your job is to help me close, and my job is to help you qualify. So let's do that. And we just flip the game.
I love that. Cause
it's a good point to your acknowledgement that it isn't everybody.
For sure. And there's lots of great SDRs, AEs out there. And I love the ones that will sort of respect the fact that the SDR is there to make you more commission. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a, like when you can build a really strong relationship, SDR, AE, that's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. And if you are in the same location and you are an AE and you're still cold calling, which you should be doing, consider your accounts that you're trying to penetrate, that could be a cold call. Go sit with your SDR and actually cold call with them in a room somewhere. It goes above and beyond. People don't do that anymore. You get to know their style. They see your style. They learn from you. You learn from them because you can see how they work and the challenges, so you can kind of coach them. But also there's just this like synergy of like, oh, you're the esteemed AE, quote unquote, and you're still doing this. Okay, I'm going to do this better. I'm going to work harder for you.
For sure. I love that. Perfect. So that's email. I want to get to LinkedIn quickly, and then
yes,
because we could spend a whole episode on LinkedIn, but let's spend some time. How do you use LinkedIn to sell and close?
How do I use it to sell and close? Again, it's a scratch my head. I think it's a work in progress. I think it's changed. I will say 2 years ago, I used Sales Navigator and it was like this new shiny tool and it was really cool and I could get through and I paid the fee for it and it was totally fine and I was getting meetings. And now it's fairly mainstream. Everybody has it. I don't know how many messages you get on LinkedIn a day. I get tons and it's kind of like, what am I doing here? So I actually am playing with this right now. I got rid of the paid subscription. Mm-hmm. I'm going and connecting with people. And like when I connect with them, I'm actually doing that voicemail credibility statement in my add a note. And then they connect with me. And then I let it rest. I kind of like check them out a couple of times. And then I ping them. And so far for the last 2 months, I've been doing it for 2 months, it's generated meetings. I wouldn't say as many meetings as I want. 15% is not bad though for not paying for the service as well. So you're,
yeah.
And it's more holistic. It's more, you know, genuine. Again, it's kind of like the cold call. It's kind of like the voicemail. I feel like LinkedIn messengers become a voicemail system where you get a lot of stuff and the weird stuff or unique, you kind of pick out and you read. The other stuff you just delete.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. With LinkedIn, it's interesting. I thought we had some really good information. We ran a test in our Outbound Labs team, and I think we're either just recorded it or just posted it on YouTube. And we're recording a ton of stuff right now. So I have a tough time keeping track of like what's going where. But basically we tested if it would improve results by not putting something in that connection statement. And we ran the first experiment it beat it like 2-1, not putting anything in. And I was like, yes, I win, because that's what I thought was going to win. And I was like, I told you all, I'm the smartest one here. Like, F anybody who doubted me. And then we replicated the experiment with a different customer, and the exact opposite thing happened. And I was like, fuck.
It just...
I'm not as smart as I thought I was.
And algorithms continue to change. I just had this discussion with someone else today. I'm helping her with her jewelry line. And it's ridiculous. Instagram, what do you do with social? But focusing on LinkedIn, I will say this. When they become a customer, connect with them. When you meet with them at a networking event, connect with them. Build that network. It's not Facebook. I don't want to see pictures of your kids at a birthday party or you wasted somewhere. But I will definitely click on if you have like a team outing and you have a company photo, blog. Blog about your day. I don't care what you sell. Everybody's in sales. It's always interesting. You could be selling toilet paper and you're meeting people that I wouldn't meet and could have a funny story that you could blog about on LinkedIn and I would click it and read. Mm-hmm. So showing yourself in those more professional ways, I think, is also key to like build your brand as a person. And make it genuine.
You're totally right. Because it comes down again, like we talked about, it's impressions. How many positive impressions can you get? And you need to get a certain number before you're a real person in your prospects' eyes. I love what you said about customers, about adding customers on LinkedIn, keeping a list.
Yes.
So I get two things in this. One, there's a great Cole Fox video from when he was at LeadIQ talking about how to track down your competitors' customers by going and looking at their salespeople and who they're connected with. So one, absolutely do that. I'll see if I can find the link to Cole's video, but I'm pretty sure if you just go into YouTube or Google and say Cole Fox, LinkedIn competitors or finding competitors.
That's a really good point. That's perfect.
So one, I love that. I'm not going to steal. It's Cole's, smart guy, credit where credit's due. Number two, the counter to that, make sure you go into your profile right now, turn that off so that people can't see who you're connected with. So that if you are a salesperson, that prevents your competitors from doing the same thing to yourself. And then the third piece is you're putting all this work into your customers and connecting with them. Create a damn list of them on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Keep track of that list, because the number one easiest deal to close is when your customer, somebody from one of your current customers goes to one of their competitors or goes to another company and thinks, and you did a great job for them. And they're like, hey, I'm at this new company. I want your help. And if you can be proactive about that, it's one of the best ways to scale up something awesome and not worry about it coming in from, you know, they come from an inbound funnel or they have to wait for you to call them.
They're a warm lead. They're what we talked about at the beginning. That is the number one reason I focus so much on LinkedIn, because again, people move around and knowing where they go is so important.
Incredible. Let me think here. Using the regular, like, so are you're like blogging and sharing, or maybe not blogging, but like sharing regularly on LinkedIn to get those impressions up. What else are you doing to keep your profile active?
I like people's posts. So I like them. I'll share them.
I used to love it. I don't think they have it anymore where you can endorse people.
They do have that. Yeah.
They still have that. But they used to have it so you could endorse them for anything. And so I used to love going on and just like endorsing people for the most random stuff. Like, I'm going to endorse you for like COBOL.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't, they've narrowed that down a little bit in the last year, I would say.
I think so. I can endorse you for Python right now.
There you go.
Rocking the Python. Nobody's endorsed you for Python here.
I don't know Python. That's probably why.
I've just endorsed you for Python. I'm going to say
this is why you should
highly skilled. Worked directly on the same team. Sure, we're on the same team on this podcast.
Yeah.
Boom. Catherine knows Python. It's in there as the things that you know, and I don't think I can add them. So
I will have to go look at that, because I do not know Python. That's interesting. See, this is why we're having this discussion on LinkedIn. I've taken some classes on like LinkedIn Learning on Python, but I haven't actually checked it. I'll have to look at that and see if there's a connection.
Interesting. Yeah. It does say programming language. So maybe it noticed those classes or something and added that in.
That's weird. No, I do not know that.
Well, if you're listening, stay tuned because we're going to get a couple people from Predictable Revenue on the podcast and we're going to talk about what we're doing on LinkedIn. I got a couple people in mind and we're just working through holidays and this and that to set it up and make it happen. So stay tuned. We'll probably record that in the next couple of weeks and you should see it hopefully by the end of the year, we'll get them on the show. So check that out. I do want to spoil one piece from Outbound Labs that's coming up. So check out Outbound Labs. It's a show or something we've got on our YouTube channel. You go into the YouTube channel and then it's one of the sections there. I swear I know how to use YouTube. I sound like I'm 800 years old trying to describe something I don't know. But basically it's a series that we're doing. That's the word I was looking for on YouTube, Outbound Labs, where we're sharing the results from all these experiments that we're testing out. And one that's particularly relevant to what we're talking about today is when you're searching on LinkedIn, specifically using SalesNav or Sales Navigator. One of the things that we tested was the quality of the list that you were getting from LinkedIn when you were using their own parameters versus when you were using a Boolean company search. And what we found was a massive increase in quality when you are using your own Boolean. So you're not using LinkedIn to discover customers. You are building your own target account list and then you're inputting it into LinkedIn. If you want to figure out how to do that or what the results were, go to YouTube, search for Outbound Labs on YouTube, or if you hit up the Predictable Revenue channel, you can find it on YouTube and it should be right there. And then it's the LinkedIn module. If it's not up, hit subscribe and it'll pop up in the next couple of weeks because we recorded that one a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And that's my unintentional plug for Outbound Labs. Sorry to distract. We get talking about LinkedIn. I'm just like, I love all the stuff that we're testing and sharing. And I just want to make sure that people are hearing about it because we're getting great.
Oh, definitely. Good.
Cool. So I want to get to the lightning round and then I'm really looking forward to this cold call because I think you're going to rock it. Anything before we move on, is there anything we've missed on LinkedIn?
I think you're right. We could go a lot deeper. That was very high level.
Perfect. I totally agree. And I know some of the lightning round is we're going to have covered this stuff a little bit already, but let's just get some short, quick answers out of you. So okay. How do you get people to reply to your emails?
I will say something like, "Hi, are you okay?" That's the subject line. I will say, "It's Catherine. It's been a few weeks since we last talked. I just want to make sure that you're okay. Let me know. Just curious." And I'll sign my name and then that's it. And they'll usually reply back like immediately. And when I say immediately, I mean within like 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. And then we just go from there.
Beautiful. And so let's say they don't reply to your email, you're cold calling them. How do you handle the brush off if they answer and they're throwing some, not real objections, but just like go away kind of objections?
I'll call you back next week. Until I hear that like very stern kind of Hollywood movie, go F yourself, I'm going to keep calling you. So if it's a kind of brush off, depending on, I'll take a note. I'll go look at their research, the company research, and see if they're having a downturn and maybe they're really in the situation going on, like they're doing a reorg. Mm-hmm. If there's no reorg or everything's still fine, copacetic, I will call back within 2 weeks. And if there's a reorg, I put it on my radar screen and kind of watch it. And then as soon as things have settled, then I'll call back in.
Gotcha. What's your take on the Babe Ruth approach, which is like, I'm going to call you back next Tuesday at 2 o'clock.
I love it. I know a lot. It's 50-50, right? It keeps me accountable. It keeps my schedule set because I know what I'm supposed to be doing. But then also if they are a C-level person, they do have a schedule. And once in a while they will be like, "Oh, okay, I'm expecting her call," and they'll have it on their calendar. And originally when I first started many years ago, I was like, "This is nonsense. I'm not doing this. No one cares." And then I actually got called out by a pretty high level CEO in Silicon Valley. And that's when I was like, "Oh, people really like keep a schedule and do this." So I will call back. It keeps me on track. Also, salespeople, look at your own schedule when you're making these calls, have it in front of you. And so if you know like Tuesday at 2 sounds really good, but if you know Tuesday at 2, you're going to be in a face-to-face meeting or maybe you're traveling, change it. Don't BS. Like, so, but have your schedule in front of you. I know I get guilty of of saying the same thing kind of over and over again. And then you're like, oh, wait, I just looked at my schedule and it's totally different. So learn the hard way.
Yeah. One of those, you got to screw it up a bunch of times to get it right.
Yep.
Cool. Last question. What do you do when you need, you're coming to the end of the quarter and you really need to push?
Oh man, what do I do? I mean, if you know, this is where the warm people come in. I am shameless. I'm in sales. They know that. They have gotten to know me where it's not, Catherine's not just calling for to sell me something. She's calling to check in. I built those relationships. So when I do need to call in that favor at the end of the quarter, or if there is something where I'm like, oh dude, I need to pad my pipeline with this, I can make those phone calls and say, hey, if you can't do it, do you know who anybody else that can? Like, who else do you know? And then I get a list of referrals. But it's because I've built that relationship where I'm not just selling for money, I'm selling to help, that I can pull that off.
Amazing. Super helpful, because you're sort of constantly building out that list of—
Constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that can help, people that are gonna, you know, be that little magical pot of gold that you can pull from when you really need to pull out a win.
I mean, I was off Facebook for a long time. I got back on Facebook. I have a lot of customers that are now friends with me on Facebook. They become friends. It's cheap. Like, you get invited to weddings. You are witnessing baby shower. There's just a plethora of things where it's like, oh wait, I actually am a friend now. It's, I just happen to do this. They happen to work at that company that I sell to. But even though they're the ones that may be signing the check or writing that PO, they're still just a friend.
That's a really cool spot to be. So I've been looking forward to this since the top of the call. Let's do a cold call role play. So your chance to promote yourself. Do you want a minute to put together your statement?
No, let's do it.
So set the stage. Who am I? Where do I work? And what's the approach here?
Yeah, let's have you be a startup. You're working on developing some salespeople and you need some training. So, hey, Colin, this is, am I doing a role play? Are you live or this is a voicemail?
I'll do ring, ring.
Oh, we're doing a ring, ring. Okay, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Hey, ready? Colin. Yeah,
ring,
I'm ready.
Ring, ring. Hey, it's my ringer. All right. Respect.
See, this is the A-type salesperson outside.
she's just ready to go. I haven't even answered the phone. And you're like mid
call. I have it.
I love it. Cool. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. This is Catherine from BHY.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm sure you're wondering why I'm calling.
I'm just about to head into a meeting. So yeah, I was curious.
I will make it very quick. I am calling because we've worked with other companies just like yours on helping to develop their sales team. And when I say that, it can be someone that's individual executive coaching, or it could be the entire sales team, just from how do you actually do your sales pitch? How do you develop it? How do you, from that cold call all the way to close? Or it could be something very strategic that you need help with. So I was reaching out to set a time when we can talk more about what your needs are and how your company's doing.
Interesting. I love the sort of elongated, like, value prop approach. Do you find that, like, do people resonate stronger with that versus like just something shorter to get them talking?
I don't know what you need. So I like to give the longer, let them think about it. Oh, she can do a lot of things rather than just this is what she does. Because what if I don't need that?
Love it. Catherine, it's been so good having you on the show. I love the opportunity to meet people that are actual top performers that have crushed it and are crushing it for themselves and for other people. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your secrets. I really
appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks.